Hello, folks. This is your host, Kim, and welcome to How to Get Away with Law, an unofficial podcast for the hit ABC show, How to Get Away with Murder. And we're going to be talking about Season 2, Episode 8. Hi, I'm Philip, except this is Kim, so I am not Philip. That is just the name of the episode. So, guys, of course, we're going to get into the recap for this episode, but as usual, I'll have a disclaimer. Just so that you guys don't have to hear just my thoughts, I go around the interwebs and look for a recap from somebody from the internet and read their recap. And so this week's recap comes from, let's see, somebody by the name of Laura Byrne Cristiano. And of course, I don't read these recaps from the before I read them to you lovely people, so you're going to be just as surprised as I am. Anyway, let's get into that recap now, shall we? Flash forward frenzy. Bonnie met the students, other than Asher, at the Hapstall Mansion, and she was handed a gun by Connor. Bonnie looks at a reluctant Connor and says, "Get on board, or you're the next dead body out there." Saving Oliver. The half-saw cousin, Philip, has broken in and surprised a terrified Oliver, who seems completely out of his league in dealing with the situation. Connor arrives home to find Oliver missing. He runs back to Annalise's house and begs for help from Annalise, Nate, Frank, and the students, excluding Asher. Just as Nate starts to call the police, Oliver walks in with Philip. Apparently, it's all a big case of mistaken identity. Philip claims he isn't the half-saw heir. His biological parents are the German couple. Philip threatens to sue Annalise. He tells her that he'll be in touch once he decides what he wants. Not sure what to believe, they decide to do a DNA test on a straw that Oliver snagged, and a relieved Connor takes Oliver home and destroys Oliver's computer to get rid of latent Philip evidence, covering their tracks. Nate follows Philip around and discovers he has gone to the police to give a statement. Nate manages to falsify records so that police don't believe any claims Philip makes. Frank, with Asher in tow, drops off the DNA and asks for a rush job, only to discover the lab is way bogged down in requests. Bonnie vs. Laurel. The only time we see Bonnie this episode, other than the flash forwards, is in a brief scene where she is huddled on the floor of her steaming shower. Bonnie is in a very dark place. Annalise keeps setting up Laurel to be the new Bonnie. Asks for what her real motives are? No one knows, but it's causing tension in the Frank and Laurel relationship. Playing Emily. No matter what they do, Emily Sinclair always seems to be one step ahead. Asher is the one who puts it together. Sinclair is bugging the house. Everyone then starts to search for the bug Asher eventually finds. They spout misinformation at the bug, which sets Emily Sinclair's case up to fall apart. The Hapstall siblings. The Hapstall siblings get an offer of 15 years each for the murder of their parents and aunt. Caleb and Catherine are starting to panic and doubt Annalise. First, Caleb makes an ill-advised deal to protect Catherine, and then Catherine makes one to protect Caleb. All of this sends the students and Annalise scurrying to save their clients for themselves, and the overly zealous Emily Sinclair. Ultimately, Catherine is seconds from pleading guilty before Annalise submits DNA evidence that Frank bribed a lab tech $50,000 to obtain a rush job. The evidence proves that Philip was the product of an incestuous relationship between Mr. Hapstall and his sister. So clearly, there is someone else with motive in this case. And Catherine decides not to take the deal. Given the situation, the charges against the Hapstalls are dismissed. Ships ahoy. After various ups and downs, the following ships are sailing. Floral, Natalise, Culliver, and Caleb and Michaela. Can someone get us a glass of water? Because we may need to cool off our TVs. We'll let the GIF do our talking for us. Sorry, you can't see a GIF in this podcast, but whatever. Bombshell. It looks like Catherine actually is guilty. Wes realizes one of Catherine's paintings was in Philip's possession, even though Catherine claims to have never known of his existence. Caleb reveals to Michaela that he found the gun Catherine must have used. Lastly, we see Catherine and Philip in a car together, plotting revenge on Annalise and company. Next week is our big reveal of what went down at the Hapstall Mansion, and then we are on hiatus until midwinter. Alrighty, guys, now it is time for the comments for this episode, and I'll dive right on into that. So, we'll start with the flash forward. Bonnie definitely likes to take charge when it comes to murder. And, of course, when there's a gun involved, because she asked for it, takes it away. So, I guess that's good. Take the gun away from the panicky students. Now, we go into the flashback, and we're only 3 days away from the fated shooting of Annalise and the murder of Sinclair. And Bonnie is an obvious wreck, and she really, really hates Annalise, which makes her the obvious top candidate to want to kill Annalise, which is way too obvious. So I guess we're not really going to put too much credit into that just yet. Especially, well, she looks really calm in the flash forwards, but like I said, too easy, too obvious. I love how Annalise sends selfies to her mom. Though when Nate appeared at her door not long after she took that selfie and sent it, I almost thought he was labeled as Mama in her phone or something. But Annalise is not like a preteen hiding her phone contacts so that her mom doesn't see it and know that she's sending naughty pics to boys. But then the fact that Nate sends her a text and the message clearly lists his contact as Nate, then that just killed that whole theory. I just thought it was really funny that she's all getting pretty and singing it, and it says, Mom, Mama, and, you know, whatever. I thought it was funny. Moving on. I'm glad Philip didn't murder Oliver, but I'll get into more about that scene later. Instead, we move to the car, and we got Laurel and Frank and Michaela and Connor. And Laurel and Frank's lover spat was a little amusing because it somehow seemed dignified, even though it was all classist. And I only slightly agree with Connor, saying straight people shouldn't be allowed to breed. But then again, us gays wouldn't exist if they didn't breed. But then again, you know, science baby. As in, science babies. Get it? No? Let's move on. Annalise, good for you not allowing Nate to force you to guilty screw him. You messed up his life and all, but does mean you should have, you know, be a sex slave in repayment for screwing up his life. Good for you. Now, I was having a hard time trying to figure out who was right in the debate when Connor came banging on Annalise's door and everybody meets up at Annalise's house, if they should call the cops or just try to figure this whole thing out on their own, since this group has a storied history of murder and cover-ups. And the fact that they would have to admit some things if they reported Oliver missing. But Annalise makes that choice for him. But instead, as Nate's calling it in, cops, oh, surprise, Oliver and Philip show up. But then that's when I'm like, why didn't anyone ask them? You know, why couldn't you guys shut the door on the way to the soup palace? Maybe you didn't have time to clean up the spilled milk, but shut the door or something. I know you needed the cold open shocker, but close the door, people. Now, good thinking, Oliver. Getting the straw from Philip in advance. Getting that DNA, so that was smart. Thank you, Oliver. He's learning, which is sad, because now he's going to be connected to this group of murderers, but good thinking. Frank is apparently on Annalise's shit list. Maybe because Bonnie's missing, but that works out in Laurel's favor as we continue to see in this episode. And I love that Connor took a hammer to Oliver's PC, but the iTech in me is like, come on, man, you gotta try a little harder than that to erase all information from the interwebs, bruh. It might stop some of the stalking, but if Philip's smart, that won't end it. But it works for TV, whatever. Now, I'm getting real tired of I should just fire you, maybe I should fire you comments from Caleb. I mean, stop me if you've heard me say that before. Wait, no, I'll do us all a favor and stop myself from saying it. Sinclair is smart, though, offering Caleb and Catherine these plea deals, as they call it. I mean, Caleb and Catherine, they are all sorts of gullible, and they make snap judgments, but especially when they're scared. I mean, I'd be scared in this case. You're being tried for the murder of your parents, so wouldn't you be scared? But that brings us to our law term of this week, as they called it a plea deal, but when I looked it up, showed it as plea bargain, and we all have a, you know, general idea what a plea bargain is. It sounds like it would make sense. You know, you bargain for a plea to lessen your sentence, but, you know, I looked it up and tried to find some more official terms to get a little more idea of a plea bargain, so here we go. A plea bargain is a deal offered by a prosecutor as an incentive for a defendant to plead guilty. If every case in the justice system went to trial, the courts would be so overloaded that they would effectively be shut down. Plea bargaining allows the prosecutor to obtain guilty pleas in cases that might otherwise go to trial. What are the types of plea bargain? There are two types of plea bargain. Charge bargain. A charge bargain occurs when the prosecutor allows a defendant to plead guilty to a lesser charge, or to only some of the charges that have been filed against him. For example, a defendant charged with burglary may be offered the opportunity to plead guilty to attempted burglary. A defendant charged with drunk driving and driving with license suspended may be offered the opportunity to plead guilty to just drunk driving charge. Sentence bargain. A sentence bargain occurs when a defendant is told in advance what his sentence will be if he pleads guilty. This can help a prosecutor obtain a conviction if, for example, a defendant is facing serious charges and is afraid of being hit with the maximum sentence. Typically, sentence bargains can only be granted if they are approved by the trial judge. Many jurisdictions severely limit sentence bargaining. Sentence bargaining sometimes occurs in high-profile cases where the prosecutor does not want to reduce the charges against the defendant, usually for fear of how the newspapers will react. A sentence bargain may allow the prosecutor to obtain a conviction to the most serious charge while assuring the defendant of an acceptable sentence. What happens if I break my deal with the prosecutor? A plea bargain is a contract between the prosecutor and the defendant, and both parties are required to comply with the terms of their contract. If you have a plea bargain with the prosecutor and you are required to perform particular tasks such as pleading guilty on a particular date, cooperating in the investigation of another offense, or testifying against a co-defendant, the prosecutor may revoke the plea bargain if you fail to testify to satisfy your duties. What happens if the prosecutor breaks his deal with me? If the prosecutor breaks a deal with the defendant may seek to have his plea set aside or may seek a court order requiring the prosecutor to respect the plea bargain. This may happen if the prosecutor has agreed not to authorize additional criminal charges against the defendant in return for guilty plea, yet subsequently files the charges. How do I make sure that my plea bargain is followed? Make sure that the plea deal is clearly stated on the record at the time of your plea. Sometimes the plea deal will be reduced to writing and will be signed by the parties. It is usually adequate to reference the written plea agreement on the record without reciting all of the terms. During a sentence, the court will ask you about any promises that you have received other than the plea bargain stated on the record in return for your guilty plea. If you answer that there are none, yet the terms of your plea are not on the record, you may find yourself without any recourse if the prosecutor only respects those terms that were stated on the record. There are rare exceptions to the rule of placing the entire plea agreement on the record. Sometimes the defense prosecutor and judge will work out a resolution of a higher profile case but will not want to place the terms of the deal on record. For example, the prosecutor may want the adverse publicity of looking soft on crime, and the judge may not want to admit to engaging in sentence bargaining in a serious case. However, don't assume that your case falls into this small category of exceptions. Ask your attorney before you plead guilty to make sure that the entire agreement is part of the record, either directly or by reference to the contract, and make the attorney explain any decision to depart from this practice. When should I first consider a plea bargain? The answer to that depends upon the facts of your case and the laws and procedures of the jurisdiction where you are charged. However, in many cases, it can be advantageous to retain an attorney and seek a plea bargain before you have been charged with an offense. For example, if your attorney can begin negotiations with the prosecutor while the police are still investigating or before you are formally charged with a crime, you may be able to obtain a reduction of charges that will not be available after charges are officially filed. And there we go. That's a plea bargain. All right, moving on. Back to the comments on the episode. I like the intercut scenes of Caleb, Michaela, and Catherine West when Catherine asked for West to come over and Annalise sent Michaela to talk to Caleb. Though I'm sure we all could have guessed the outcomes of those conversations, but I was really annoyed at Wes's influence on Catherine nonetheless, and I'm glad Annalise took him off the case. Now, ADA Sinclair dumps a bunch of cases so that Frank and Asher have trouble getting the rush job on Philip's DNA. Now, that should have been our first indicator that something was fishy and that Sinclair was up to no good. And then Sinclair was playing dirty, and she decides, hey, you know what, I'm going to sneak a bug into that house. But she's smart. That's the only way you can play with Annalise. You got to play dirty. And poor Frank getting dissed in favor of Doucheface by Annalise, because Asher figures it out. And then Frank, while they're trying to dump out files and figure it out, where this bug is and trying to be covert about it and writing on sheets of paper. I love when they're like, can we leave now? Because they've been searching forever. And then Frank's like, no one's leaving until we found the evidentiary file. I mean, evidentiary? Is that a word? And I like how Laurel talked really loudly into the pen once they figured out it was the pen that had the bug in it. I mean, it's the year 2015. There's a bug planted into something as small as a pen. They're going to make sure that the range is good and solid on that thing. But it was funny. Then Nick goes in once he tells Annalise, dude, Philip is in there. He's giving a confession to the cops. He goes in, messes with some files, and he decides, you know, I'm going to go in there, search out this dude named Scott Fuller, which change Philip's information with Scott's history, and say, you know, he's got schizophrenia. Clever. Now nobody's going to believe him. And Philip looks a little twitchy. They'll believe it. And then, here we go. We got Frank and Laurel having another lover spat. And Frank says, you know, tells it Laurel that Annalise is just using her. And says, you know, she's just using you until Bonnie gets back in. Is he right? I'm going to go with the answer is yeah. Annalise is using her. But I also think she does see potential for Laurel. I think Laurel's got a future in being a lawyer who knows how to be cutthroat. And, you know, of course she's going to be tossed aside if Bonnie comes back. But Laurel's got potential. I like Laurel. Even when she drives me insane, she's got a lot of potential. I was definitely annoyed with Caleb and Catherine both doing that. I'll take the deal and save my sibling switch. I mean, which one was really having the attack of conscience here? We'll discuss that a little later, as you know we're going to when we get to the end of this episode. But of course, I love the students trying to figure out what they're going to do while Catherine's in there, getting ready to take this plea deal and go into jail for her brother, and they can't figure anything out. But thank God, Frank comes in with the DNA results, and Catherine was about to piss me off, so thank goodness, Frank. Thank you for coming through with that big old suitcase of money. Now, after Sinclair's whole thing fails, and she's on the phone, just panicking, who was she talking to saying she messed up? Is that her psychiatrist? Maybe her mommy? Can't stand Sinclair. Whatever. But we do find out that Philip is the product of incest between brother and sister. Ugh, gross. So yeah, no wonder why he killed them. Now, so after that, we're getting ready to gear up for the sex and scenes. But this is where I'm all confused, because Michaela was saying she was wondering if Caleb was gay, but I remember saying a couple episodes ago that he wondered if her, when Catherine was recording him, and he said, I was wondering if that thing about you talking about my butt, if that was true. I figured she would realize that, you know, he was kind of into her then. But I guess it doesn't matter because they start sexing it up later anyway. And then so while they're sexing it up, Nate and Annalise start sexing it up. And Laurel and Frank are sexing it up. And Oliver and Connor are sexing it up. And then Wes is over there with some weird painting Catherine sent to him. And then that's when we find out, oh, Philip's got a painting. And then I'm trying to parse out this whole painting that Wes had, and I'm confused. I had to watch this obviously more than once, and at first I was thinking, what is that picture? Is that a picture of like Wes's dad and his mom and Wes? And I'm, you know, this is the first time I was watching, I was confused trying to figure that whole part out. And then I was like, what's going on with this whole thing? And then, you know, and I want to know what you guys were thinking if you watched it more than once, and what you were thinking in the first run through of these pictures and what Catherine sent him and all that stuff, what you guys were thinking. That'd be awesome. But then all of a sudden, Wes puts some pieces together, and at the same time, after apparently Michaela gets another wonderful O, Caleb reveals to her what Wes is starting to put together. And then Wes goes rushing to Annalise's house. And then we find out there was a missing murder weapon. And then, you know, I was like, wait a minute. There was all that house searching, and they couldn't find this gun. But anyway, so Caleb reveals this gun. And Caleb's like, you know, I wonder if she did do it. Then we find out Philip and Catherine are in cahoots. And I'm wondering, maybe Catherine isn't a crazy killer. I'm just hoping. I'm hoping it gets hopes, even though Philip and Catherine are in the car, you know, maybe they're planning stuff against Annalise and the group, but I'm over here just hoping and praying somehow Catherine is just still innocent. And I'm just thinking, I'm wondering, maybe Catherine isn't a crazy killer. Maybe she's in this to protect Caleb, and Philip is blackmailing her or threatening Caleb's life, and that's why she's working with him. And I'm thinking that maybe why we see Frank putting her corpse-like body in the woods or something with the blood stains and stuff, for her to wake up the next morning, Caleb is hiding out with McCaleb at that, you know, in the future and the flash forward. And I keep wanting and hoping Catherine is innocent. She just sends that picture to Wes as a desperate plea, a hidden message or something, to help him put together some pieces and figure out what's going on, and that somehow he'll save Caleb from Philip, and then, you know, maybe it's her last hope, and even though she'll be incriminated, you know, at least Caleb will be saved. Or maybe she is a killer and did purposely do all this killing, but she still has an attack of conscience and wants Caleb to be saved and still wants to send this message for Wes to put it together. And, you know, I don't know what's going on, but who knows? Maybe you guys know. What's your theory? Maybe you should tell me. You know how you can tell me? You can send an email, or you can even record some audio and attach it to an email, and you can send that email to howtogetawaywithlaw@gmail.com, or you can tweet me at getawaywithlaw, or you can just go ahead and follow getawaywithlaw. That'd be awesome. Search out the Facebook group at getawaywithlaw. Just search out getawaywithlaw and go ahead and like the page. That'd be awesome, because there's only like 3 likes. I've seen some views, but there are no likes. Please go and like the page. And definitely go to iTunes, rate the podcast. That'd be awesome, so more people can see it and it'd be visible. And if you can, leave a comment. Leave some stars. Fives. I love fives. And definitely send some feedback. It'd be awesome to talk to other people, you know, other than myself, and hear your honest opinions, any critiques, any comments, compliments. And I just want to hear your theories. I want to hear from fans. So, guys, we only have one more episode until the winter break, and then I'm going to be depressed until it comes back, and then eventually it's going to be in the season two, and then I'm going to be depressed again for a really long time until it comes back. But I'll stop being depressed now, because we still have some time. We still have some episodes, so I'll stop being a downer. And until next time, guys, a couple days, last episode until the winter break. Until then, this has been your host, Kim.